It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Oh, God, I forgot about that. I don't like that at all.
Recording in progress.
Makes me very uncomfortable. I don't know who she is and why she's listening. I don't like it. So I have discovered, I mean, I always kind of knew, but I've got like deep confirmation now that I have the best marriage in the world. Mm. So apologies to the rest of you who are married. But I'm not married to this cat, despite what she might tell you. My wife, Trish and I, best marriage. And I will explain. But to explain, I must tell several nested stories all together.
Nested? Like, yes. One is in another? Like, there's a story that we're going to...
Yes, yes. Story, wow. Story plus X equals story sub one.
You know, it'll be like an inception kind of thing.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, I'm ready.
So, the other day, I'm doing dishes. And my wife is cleaning up some crap in the bedroom. By her side of the bed, she had things because she works in there. So the habit of just setting stuff down is big. So she brought some recyclables up, specifically pop cans, which in this state, there's a 5-cent deposit that you can then get back. But since COVID, it was locked down for a long time and nobody was allowed to take any cans. They still charged you the 5 cents when you bought them, but you weren't allowed to return them. And now some places have gotten them back, but like the place we went is just permanently decided not to do that anymore. So we're throwing them in our general recycling. We miss out on the money, but they still, in theory, get recycled. So to do that, we got to rinse them out good and everything. So she brings me a bunch and I'm rinsing them out in the sink as I'm finishing up with the dishes. And she goes to sit down, because dinner is going to be soon, I believe. By the way, this story ends, I should have said up front, with my wife laying on a couch, twisting and turning because she's giggling so hard she can barely breathe, and me stomping my feet on the floor and yelling at her that she is a garbage person. Hmm. I feel like it's good leading up to know that's where we're going to end this story.
Okay.
So my wife gave me some cans, I'm rinsing them out, and one of them, a can of bubbly, the unsweetened seltzer drink, green apple specifically, is heavy, like is still like half full. Hmm. Which I'm like, eh. Hold on. Weirder, the top of the can that is open has cobwebs around. So this can has been around long enough to develop cobwebs. Not great. Also, this is the point at which I should say no spiders enter into the story, so people who worry about that can relax. It's not better necessarily than a spider, but it's nothing alive. So I put it under the water and I go and rinse it, pour it out, and it's orange, like dark orange. And bubbly, famously, no color. It's just soda water. So I'm trying to figure out what might have happened internally that created this sort of thing. When I realized that it's not just dark orange, it has chunks in it.
Mm.
And so I put more water in, I'm rinsing again. And that is when the first cherry pit came out. And I was like, ah! And Trish is like, what? But I can't talk because I'm still fascinated because I can still hear things in there. So I rinse it again. another cherry pit. A bunch of pieces of cherry come out. So these aren't even ones that like she cleaned well. She threw in here. And then a lump of plastic. And at this point, I'm like, ah! And she's like, what? I'm like, just a sec. And I sort of separated it out, rinsed it off, and it is two lancets for glucosameters. The little thing we prick ourselves with so that we can check our blood sugar. Mm. Two from my wife's machine. We have slightly different ones. Mm. And so this is the point at which I went in and talked to my wife and said, you're bubbly. Was orange and chunky. I found out you put cherries in there. And she's like, oh yeah, I did that for a while. I'm like, yes, you did. I'm like, and then I found lancets. She's like, what? I said, lancets, plural, which means there was a time in your life, like, that's not just something you did offhand. There was a period of time in your life where the thing that you did after checking your blood sugar was to put the damn lancet in half a cup of bubbly. And this is the point at which I said, you are a garbage person. You are disgusting. And she's dying. And I'm stomping on the floor. Upside to being on a concrete slab, I can stomp on the floor and never worry that like I'm going to break something or fall through or whatever. It's just concrete. It's great. So we call this. And then, little epilogue to that story. Two almonds came out afterwards. Whole almonds, seemingly untainted in any fashion, just living in there. So, and the funny thing is, I say that, I go back, I'm like, there's almonds. And she's like, what? No! She's like, are you sure it's not a plum pit? Or something? I'm like, no, it's an almond. And she was so shocked that she would have left almonds in there. Lancets didn't phase her that much, but like uneaten almonds, that was a bridge too far. So I've been telling this story a lot with her and on my own. And then we went to the in-laws for the weekend. And I told this story among others. And Trish told some stories too that we had. And we just killed, like everybody's just cracking up. And so later that night, we're going to bed and I'm like, we really crushed it tonight with our stories. And she said, yeah, we've been practicing them for a year. She's like, these are all our good stories. And I realized she was right. And that when I was telling the can story that time, I was not remembering what happened with the can. I was going through the memorized 3-minute sketch story I had that I had built over time. And here's where you say this line, and then you're going to pause here because they're going to laugh a whole bunch. And then you say, I realized later, I'm like, no, I just have a bit. I have a tight 2 minutes about a bubbly can. And that's what I was telling. But how does this relate to me having a perfect marriage? I will tell you how this relates to having a perfect marriage, because all of that is the story that you tell. But there's a behind the scenes story that you don't hear. And that is, after I stomped my feet and called her garbage person, she's dying laughing. I also said to her, I think it proves my worth as a husband that I have not thrown this away. I am still rinsing it out to recycle because I know that's important to you. And she said, oh. And then I go back over there and I look again, and it wasn't two lancets. It was only one lancet. And so I went back over to the family room and I was like, in the interest of full disclosure, I have discovered it is not two lancets, it's only one. She said, that's fine, babe. You're going to tell it like there's two anyway. And I said, what? She said, because it's a better story. She's like, so when you tell it to your friends and when you tell it this weekend to my family, as I know you will, just tell it. And I was like, you're right. I mean, because she was right. It's a better bit with the two lancets, and the fact that that immediately occurred to her is why I am desperately in love with that woman. And all your marriages are secondary to that. You don't have that. It's a beautiful thing.
You don't have that.
You aren't married to my garbage person. Jesus. I think Ezzy's on the start of a new hunger strike because she's being squirrely as shit. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that here in 2021 still would like to be the podcast with the most cake. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 533.
533. It seems like too many. Seems like I don't know what's happening here. For those of you just joining us, we have a cat. We also have a hat. It's magical. Say something.
Something?
Somehow I got the weird background thing, like your sound had cut out. So, but it's fine. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People, humans, not cats, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. I am cat now. The hat, all on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically with the hat itself. We, it's human, and apparently one kitty servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. And one of the hosts is so bored, he's reading his own bookshelf. So, you know, this ain't good.
Well, I just realized that, you know, I took that counseling psychology class 25 years ago. And I just realized I still have the books from it. And they're right here. I can't believe there's only two, though. I thought maybe there were more.
25 years ago. So that has chapters on how to deal with the vapors and things like that.
They might be useful. I don't know why it didn't occur to me as soon as I started taking classes again in counseling that I would actually have books. I didn't even think about it. I can't believe there's just two, though. I mean, I could believe if there was one, because it's theories of psychotherapy, and that's really what both classes were. This other one is object relations and self psychology, which, I mean, that's a very specific thing. I don't know why I would have a book on a specific perspective rather than one or two books on general, whatever.
Dig into this. I think there's no telling how high this conspiracy goes. Let's get to the bottom of these 25-year-old psychology books. Your very grade might have depended on it.
Yeah.
25 years ago.
I mean, here's a selected writings of Carl Gustav Jung. That I bought myself and read myself just on my own time, which probably says something about me.
But it's something we all already knew. I mean, we have an episode called Only the Good Die Young.
Right. Yeah.
I definitely have learned more about Jung from this podcast than I knew ever before.
He's an interesting person.
I call him Carl now. I feel closer to him.
Yeah, Carl. Yeah.
I say it like Andrew Lincoln says it on Walking Dead, though. Carl. Carl.
His middle name's Gustav, so you could call him Gus like your cat, but
I don't call my cat Gus, so that's fine. No, you don't.
I do. But...
Yes. Because for some reason you think my cat is Greek.
Just think it's funny. Because I have a dumb sense of humor.
All right. Before we go into the more general topic of how your week was, I think it's time for a little episode of podcast within a podcast that I've learned from the McElroy brothers. This one called Stories from the IHOP. So I feel like you should open the gates on this one for the experience we had at the IHOP.
Why should I do it?
Big well, professional movie types, because you know me, once I get started, I'm not going. So you should start, and when I feel you've spoken enough, I will jump in and cowboy up the story
as usual.
But exactly, yeah.
But okay, so really the only thing that I did have happen this week was this, so this will be my whole week.
Hey, here we go. We don't yet have a theme song for Tales from the IHOP,
but we got,
it'll be something spooky.
Oh, okay. We got together. I ordered a short stack as usual, because that's my
nickname. And some crispy potatoes.
Because that's my nickname from high school. And
that was your other nickname from high school.
We were talking, yeah, crispy potatoes. We were talking about my, for lack of a better term, screenplay. It's not eventually, I mean, it's eventually going to be published as an online thing, but it's, I'm writing as a screenplay. So we're talking about that. And at a kind of an odd point, really, in that conversation, this older fellow from, I say older, I would think he was close to my dad's age, maybe, but maybe probably younger. He interrupts and wants to know if we have any ideas about how he can, what he can do with some material. He has interviews of his father. His father was in World War II, and he,
well, except it didn't start with what we could do with it. We seemed like the kind of people that would know what he could do with it. He had not at that point attempted to co-opt us into his memoir creations.
Right.
I knew it would happen.
Also, I think he was talking mostly to you, not to me.
Because I was the one giving all the criticism when he heard, because I was literally critiquing your screenplay at the time.
Right. In fact, later he suggested that he thought Tony was an instructor and I was the student getting feedback.
Which is funny, because I'm amused by the whole thing, but I don't have shit to say to this guy. And so I just sat there and watched William. William is like, I mean, you could see the look in his eyes. He was like, I am going to get this old lady across the street and earn this merit badge if it kills me.
So he had these interviews with his father, and he thought they were very interesting and thought other people would find them interesting. So what he wanted to know was, you know, if we had any ideas about, you know, what resources were out there for him to figure out what to do with it. Tony suggested a podcast right away, and I rudely interrupted and suggested something on YouTube instead, because he also had photos and I thought the photos would go well with recordings. And he wasn't impressed with that idea. He liked your podcast idea, like right out of the gate.
Well, because I was the professional.
That's right. Good one. That's a good one.
I don't know who he thought we were exactly, but he thought we were people who knew our shit.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he thought we were serious professional somethings. I'm not even sure he knew what. But he really,
I don't know what he was picking up on. Do you? I mean, do you have any clue or notion?
I mean, when I critique a piece of work, I assume to untrained ears, it sounds like the critical theory version of like hacking on a basic cable action show. Like, I think listening to me critique a piece of work sounds really impressive if you have no idea how to critique a piece of work. I think I sound like the flashy, dumbed down version that you would put on the episode of NCIS or whatever.
Okay, but
here's
the thing. If he would have heard your first critique of this, it was so much more impressive, because there was so much.
Yeah, but he would have been mad at me then, because I shit all over you.
No. It was very good. It was very helpful. In fact, you know, I think that you gave such good feedback. I think it really helped me do good things with it. Most of your critique this time was also good, but it wasn't as involved, or, I mean, it didn't really reveal how actually good you are at this kind of thing.
Well, this well, you cleaned it up so much that this critique was entirely, here's a thing I noticed. It may or may not be a thing you care about or is real. The first time I had shit that I was pretty straightforward in saying, this really is good. Messed up. Not that this doesn't work for me, but this is, you had actual broken bits in your first.
Well, time. And that's what I'm saying. If he had heard that, if he was impressed by what he heard this at IHOP recently, he would have thought you were a freaking genius if you heard the other one.
He apparently already did.
Of course
did,
you are, but.
Which is bad luck for him because I love saying shit. And then he asked for our card.
Yeah. After we pretty much already, I think, indicated, well, we're not that kind of outfit.
We were like, no. Yeah, we impressed the shit out of him. And I don't fully understand why. But it was fun.
Well, I like you said, I think he eventually wanted us to. Yeah, so he had these interviews with his dad and he wanted to know what to do with them. And, you know, Tony suggested a podcast. I suggested, because he had photos too, that maybe YouTube. But he went back to the podcast idea. And we talked about how he could, maybe with a partner, could give context to the recordings and whatever and things like that. We talked about a few other things he could do with the material, you know, museums or whatever. So we had a substantial conversation with him. He's from Burlington. but I don't want to lose the context here. The context was you and I are just sitting there sort of minding our own business, talking about this screenplay. And he's just sitting, I mean, you know, three
he
or four
sitting
feet
by
away.
Himself eating breakfast. Yeah.
And he just sort of interrupted in a weird place because obviously he was going to leave or wanted to leave and talk to you mostly because he thought you were the authority there and just asked, hey, I've got this stuff. Do you guys have any idea? And you're right. After a while, it was pretty clear he wanted to see if we would do something with it, I think.
Yeah, because it did get quickly to a point where I'm just like, I mean, Google's a thing. And I even said at one point, because I was like, start a podcast. And he's like, I don't know how to do that. And I'm like, yeah, and I don't know how to tell you. Just Google how to start a podcast. And the internet knows. I have read many an article on it.
Yeah, you're right. He probably wanted us to go, hey, we'll listen to it or whatever.
And there's this vibe. I mean, he says he just wants a record from his dad and he thinks other people might be interested in hearing it. And I truly believe he believes that. He's got that thing in him like I did when I started this where I'm like, and maybe it becomes like famous and stuff. Like somewhere in the back of his head, and it might be wholly unconscious. Over the various years, it mutated into various forms in me, many of which were wholly unconscious. But there's that, you know, I want it. And I was just like, I don't, dude, your dad's stuff might suck. I don't know. And I don't care enough to get in on this. Because that's the thing, he has hours and hours of his, and at a certain point, he starts taking down his dad harder than I think he was aware, because he was like, he's from a different time, he said, and then he told some specific story that I believe ended with, and then of course dad said something inappropriate about the Jews.
Right.
And I'm just like, no, I mean,
well, I mean, I don't even know why he even brought that up. I mean, part of that is you could almost assume already without him having to say, but.
And that's the fact that you have preemptively thought your apologism through this far already means there's some shit in there.
But yeah, I didn't really think about that. You're right about that.
I'm like, he wanted us to know up front, dad was kind of racist. And if you're pushing that to the front of the line, that means it is a much bigger deal than you might expect it to be.
Well, also that probably is another indicator that he wanted us to say, oh yeah, we'll look at this for you. Let's help you out. But probably not us. He was probably mostly talking to you. I don't think he really cared about
which
what I had to say.
Bad, because yeah, you were the one who was showing any enthusiasm. But I suppose that made me look more aloof and cool.
And professional.
Mm-hmm.
He used that word. He said we sounded professional. It's like,
no. I'm super good. at sounding professional when I choose to.
I mean, I think we sounded serious, you know, like.
Well, and like, you and I have a artistic shorthand at this point. So we will talk about narratives like they were freaking Lego and we can understand each other because we've done it so long.
Yeah. Yeah.
That if I'm like, you have to drop something in part two here that does da 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 da. I have no idea if any other writer would have any clue what the hell we're talking about because we just kind of made it up. But from the outside, it probably sounds really impressive.
That's true. It probably does. Yeah, I don't know. It was an unusual thing.
And we both get very geeky in that thing. And as Trish has always said, it is really fun to watch somebody geek out about something. And you and I geek pretty hard when we're discussing narratives.
Yes, we do. Because that's one of the biggest things we probably have in common is that interest in that, liking to talk about it and figure it out.
That's the only thing we have in common.
No, we've got a lot of things
in common. The world.
No, come on. It's the big thing that Jazz and I have in common too, but we've got a lot of other things in common.
You do the drumming.
Wow, she's really been impressing you with her crazy stories.
Her once again, outtakes from fucking Little Orphan Annie.
I have told her.
Separate comic strip called Jasmine the Wiliest Orphan, which is weird because her stories all involve her never being an orphan and being surrounded by family. They're just freaking circus people and dudes named Morty who are skimming off the top of the bowling alley income. Well, what is this?
I've told her she needs to write all this down.
Did she appear in a vision to Martin Scorsese when he was at the height of his coke binge? Like,
they're good stories, all of them. Some of them I've heard before.
They really are.
Sometimes I haven't, but it's like they're all good.
It's a very Bob Mortimer thing. And like, if anybody else was tossing these out, I wouldn't buy it for a second. But I just inherently believe her.
She could, I think, she could write all of this down in kind of like a memoir style, release it, not say it's a memoir, and someone would think it was a brilliant piece of fiction. They would. They'd think, wow, this is very interesting and creative.
And they'd option it for a movie. Yeah. And recast Jazz as white. the final Jazz would be Reese Witherspoon. Depending on how late the memoir goes, she might need to have some aging makeup done if she doesn't release this until years later or whatever.
Reese Witherspoon.
Whatever age it stops at, Reese Witherspoon plays that version. I think it could go, you know, anywhere from 40 to 90. So as long as the memoir ends somewhere in that range, and that gives Jazz some time to work on it. I don't know how Jazz old Jazz is, but Jazz ain't anywhere near 90. I don't think Jazz isn't 60 yet, right? Jazz is like your age.
Jazz is older than I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
But not 90.
No.
All right. So somewhere between 50 and 90. So yeah, that's prime Reese Witherspoon territory. The point is, whenever Jazz tells these stories, I also always picture a very young Reese Witherspoon. That is what I was really trying to get at here. But I don't know Reese Witherspoon any younger than the movie Election. So even ones of when like Jazz is like six or whatever, it's still Election era Reese Witherspoon, who's probably like 20. But that's what I'm picturing. So,
okay,
these stories are messing with me. I probably shouldn't tell them anymore. They're giving me vivid Reese Witherspoon hallucinations.
Another great story.
So what else happened this week?
Oh, nothing to really. I mean, just school. What about you? What happened in your week?
I went to visit my in-laws.
Oh yeah, right.
That was actually really pretty cool.
And you told funny stories.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they told funny stories. We told all the stories that we've been saving up since COVID. But yeah, just a lot of hanging out. The niece and nephew are both crazy old now. The niece is theoretically 16 and a half, but for social purposes, she's essentially just another grown-up in the room. And so she's telling stories and she's listening to stories. The son's so still a little bit.
I remember when we first started and you'd talk about her, she's a little, you know, 6-year-old kid or whatever. And now here we are.
Well, Bucho's heading for her junior year of college. So,
oh, yeah.
How crazy is that? And yeah, all of my brother's kids have now graduated. His youngest just graduated high school. And his oldest just got his master's.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing this long enough that when you first started talking about these kids, they were kids. They were little.
She would have been 10 when we started. And now, sorry, that's Bucho. Bucho would have been 10. And now she's 20.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. So she, yeah, she just would hang out with the rest of it. And the nephew, he had a growth spurt. He shot up like a foot. He has his huge broad shoulders. His voice is just down now. It still cracks a little, but it's basically down. He has a little tiny peach fuzz mustache. It's terrifying. I'm like, who is this man and where did he put my niece, my nephew? It's crazy. But they're all just like older, and that was cool. So we all just hung out and had a great time. The weather largely cooperated. We got a little bit of gardening done for my mother-in-law. Yeah, so it was a really good time. And then since then, I'm a complete shut-in. Like, that was great. And that took every ounce of socializing ability I had then. So, like, the next day we went to breakfast. That was kind of stressful for me because there were people around and stuff and all that. And then I went shopping and I hated that. And then I just sort of haven't, like, I canceled gaming on Tuesday. I'm like, my ability to cope with other people is exhausted, and it's proving to take a while to like grow back. I'm hoping maybe by this weekend, because we got to watch some kids a little bit this weekend. But I'm just like, my resource of that muscle is very atrophied. The muscle by which I hang around with other people. I still love it. I still need to, but it takes a lot to replenish it. It's exhausted now. Talk amongst yourselves.
So you didn't do very much else then? I mean, you probably saw movies and stuff, right?
We're still watching Shadow and Bone. I really don't like it. We're almost done with the season. I'm confident I won't come back. I don't care what happens to any of them. And I don't believe any relationship in it. I think this is an adaptation issue, because there's a whole bunch of shit going on between characters that I'm like, this would make more sense if we got this way over the course of a novel. It makes less sense getting there over the course of 2-hour long episodes, which break down into like 4 different plot arcs. Yeah. There's a lot of people caring for each other and feeling about each other in various ways that I'm like, you haven't earned that. I'll bet you do in a book, but not here. I still haven't seen more than like 2 character traits out of our hero, and they're not interesting character traits to me. So when people talk about the exciting, you know, strong woman, I'm like, I haven't seen that at this point. Yeah, and I don't know. It has some moments. It's very pretty, but I'm pretty sure I'm out of that. We're still watching final season of Pose. I don't think it's done yet. Still love that show, but those episodes take a lot, so we watch them flow. I don't think I watched anything worth talking about otherwise.
I'm reading a chapter on adolescence today.
Ooh, how is that?
I'm taking notes as I read for a variety of reasons. I'm writing a lot more than I'm reading.
Unsurprising.
I have opinions about this. And I'm not, it's taking me hours to read something that's like 10 or 15 pages because I'm so, you know, I'll read a paragraph and I'll be like, that's not how this works. And even the research you're pointing to, if I look at that research, it does not say what you're saying it says. So it's kind of frustrating, but I don't know. Do you think, what's your opinion? I mean, my opinion is probably obvious and a lot of people probably think it's wrong, and that's fine. Do you think that our culture has, even the academics of our culture, mind you, which, I mean, I realize maybe you don't have an opinion about that because you don't read what academics say about these things, but what's your feel? Do you think we as a culture have a good handle on what adolescence even is? And keep in mind that this text I have, I'm reading about early adolescence, which is considered to be 13 to 18. There's a whole other adolescent chapter that's supposed to be from 18 to 25. They're calling this part of adolescence. So just keep that in mind. What is your thoughts? I mean, do you think we have a good handle on what adolescence, you know, is? Or do we just have a handle on what it is in our culture and we think it generalizes to everybody else's?
Yeah, I don't know where the data comes from. In most social sciences, we have a good sense of how it is in our culture, and then we just guess for everybody else. Mostly because often we only have data from our culture.
That's right. That's true. You're right about that.
And a lot of social science is trying to interpret from data. But of course, social science is the most difficult to nail down of the disciplines, because we're trying to approach it from a data perspective, but we're dealing with things that have an inherently subjective nature attached to them.
And also there are more ethical concerns with that kind of research than, you know.
Oh, of course. Of course.
You don't have to worry about ethics. You don't have to worry about disturbing the atoms when you're doing physics research. But, you know, when you're doing research on human behavioral and social sciences, you got to take into account, you can't just do anything to subjects.
And in some cases, before we established those rules, one or two people did some very ethically dubious studies.
That's right.
And since we won't let ourselves do that anymore, we rely on those studies, even if we have since discovered there's a lot wrong with those studies.
Right. So yeah, it's like, it is hard. Well, also though, another problem with, there's the subjectivity aspect, which you're correct about, but there's also the problem that unlike a lot of other types of research, when it comes to human behavioral research of any kind, there's almost always a result that the people want to find, right?
Yeah.
Like there's not really an agenda about whether or not, you know, we're going to find this particular particle. But when it comes to researching things, especially if it involves political things like gender issues or race issues or socioeconomic issues, you know, people have a thing they want it to say. And sometimes when you read the research, it looks like they're just finding what they want to find. And that's,
although that happens I think you're selling too short the physical sciences. I think they frequently have an outcome because you want to find the particle. Otherwise, you did a whole bunch of shit for no reason.
Well, yes, but
nobody ever has a giant breakthrough that theoretical problem thing has been proven not to exist.
I know, but that it's a lot easier to get caught fudging and cheating in a physics experiment than it is in a social.
That is true. There's a lot considerably less ability to finesse in certain scientific fields than in social scientific fields.
So it's hard. I mean, I don't like human sciences being called soft science and all that nonsense. I also don't like when people in the human sciences feel like if they don't have some number associated or equation associated with what they're doing, it's not real science. That's baloney. There's qualitative science methods that are perfectly good. But I do have to admit that in the human sciences, there's a lot, you know, there are things that you have to think about that make it complicated and difficult that other scientific disciplines don't have to worry about.
So, yes. Including very few people who study math get to a point where they're going to study something somebody discovered that they disagree with, but they still have to study it. And this is an important thing in social sciences and humanities. You have to study the people that made up the body of knowledge, and some of them you're not going to like, and in many cases all of them you're not going to like, but you still have to learn them in order to have that base of understanding for going forward.
I read a great article this week that I found completely by accident. I mean, I found it as part of doing an assignment, but I was just really lucky to find it. This guy was talking about the history of family counseling, and he took, in looking at the history of the discipline, he took what he called an anthropological approach, which was brilliant. I mean, that, I don't know why everybody doesn't do that, because it was a really insightful examination of the history, and it was bringing in, you know, it was really examining the evolution from a cultural anthropology standpoint, like a cultural anthropologist would see it, and sort of treating all, you know, treating certain, for example, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about if it's not clear. So he would treat, like, in family counseling, there's a lot of talk of its history being deep in something called systems theory. And so he talked about that as part of the lore, right? As part of the folklore of the discipline, which was brilliant, because that's, it was part of the folklore of the discipline. And when he examined everything from that kind of anthropological perspective, it was so much more insightful, right, than what you usually get in someone talking about history. Because here's the thing, in this course, I've read the history of the discipline articles several times, and what this guy said about them was right. They are not just some objective person looking at the history of this discipline. It's myth building, right? You're the people who write these history of the discipline things they're not just being objective historians. They're building a myth. They're building some lore that the people who are part of this discipline can share with one another and use like any other cultural group. And, you know, he observed this. And then, so then he treated that method, that anthropological method, to this particular historical, thing, the history of family counseling, and it was so fascinating, and I was just really impressed by it. I bring it up to you because I know you've got an anthropology background, and I thought maybe you'd appreciate someone sort of stepping out and stepping back and going, hey, how about instead of us doing this usual thing we do with the history of the profession and pretending like we're being objective historians, how about we analyze this like an anthropologist would? It was very interesting.
I appreciate the concept. I think it's a terrible thing for you to find your first year into your master's program.
Well, what
because insofar as you sound like another person when you talk about this stuff, and that's a very narrow margin, but insofar as you do, you sound like me and some people I went to college with in our first year of college taking certain social science courses, where we come in and we're like, yeah, no, this is founded on bullshit here. And sometimes we were wrong, sometimes we were right. It really didn't matter though, because if you want to point out how broken the system is, you have to prove that you are well versed and conversant in it first. So you have to learn all the ins and outs of these perspectives that you don't agree with before anyone in the institution will talk to you.
Well, this isn't really about, I mean, that wasn't really the point I was making. I'm not saying anything's broken. I'm just saying it was an interesting take on the whole thing. After reading so many histories that I mean, you know, I'm 52 years old. I've read things and done things, so I can tell that some of these histories are a little bit. I mean, they're not inaccurate. They're just. It's a narrative that's crafted, right?
Well, that's the thing. Either you or he needs to adjust your argument, because what I think I pretty soundly took away is the current model of family counseling is based largely on myth creation.
No.
And I think if you say that in your class, you're not going to do good.
No, that's not what I meant. I meant that when people talk about. See, to me, this is even an obvious point, actually, when people, because when I talk about the history of something, I don't really think of it as me being an objective historian. I mean, I try to stick to facts, but I'm also building lore, you know, I'm building a thing that a whole bunch of other people are going to use to sort of connect and sort of organize behavior and things like that. And I think everybody who writes these histories of the discipline does that. Although I don't think they would admit that they do that,
and I absolutely agree with you. I agree with the entire point you've made, and I think it is a fascinating one to consider. I think bringing any of that in your discourse, in your writing, in your anything to the course you're in right now will only cause you pain and conflict.
Too late.
Hey, how'd it go?
I don't know yet.
Yeah.
No, and the context of me bringing it in is the fact of the matter is, when this guy used this anthropological perspective to talk about the history of this discipline, it was a good history of the discipline, and it was actually a fairly complimentary one too, by the way. And so, I mean, it's perfectly valid as a history, and I was just talking about the history of the discipline and making reference to this article in it. I mean, I don't think I haven't said anything controversial or anything like that, I don't think.
You're just getting awfully meta for the start stuff.
I know. Well, actually,
professors time and again have said this in philosophy classes, in literature classes, in all of these. Learn the material before you start trying to improve upon the material.
I know, but I mean, some of this material I do.
And I'm not saying it's a good system at all. I'm saying the one that's there. It is how you succeed in higher education.
Right. And, you know, I do know some of this material. In fact, one of the things I really liked about this article was, like, George Herbert Mead was mentioned in it. William James and the American Pragmatists were mentioned. All these things, people that I know about, have books on and read. So, I mean, you know, a lot of this stuff I do know. But sometimes I feel like a little bit of a rabble-rouser because I'll say something
in it.
Discussion and some of the other people in the class will say, yeah, I see what you're saying here, because, and they'll kind of agree with whatever I'm saying. And I'll get a little nervous because they'll be like, okay, well, I felt like I had to summon the courage just to bring this up kind of as an offhand thing. And now someone's putting a magnifying glass on it by responding to just that little piece. It's like, oh no, don't do that. I don't want to stand out.
100% of the stories you've told me on and off the air related to this class have boiled down to, yeah. So I got a little confused/frustrated because the things they talk about aren't accurate and don't even match with the stuff they were talking about earlier. And when I bring this up, it makes things awkward in my class and with my professor.
That's
end of anecdote.
And right, but
I've heard like eight of those.
I know, but those are the only interesting things to talk about. Those are the only interesting things to talk about. How would it be interesting for me to say, oh, I read something and wrote a paper that just accorded exactly with what I read? That's boring. I wouldn't tell a story about that.
I did not say, tell me an interesting story about your classes. I said, how is classes going?
And so I immediately think, well, I'll tell an interesting story.
And that leads me to believe that is pretty much what your experience has been so far, is those instances, because those are literally the only ones I have heard about.
I know. Well, and yeah, actually, that is kind of mostly what my experience is.
And I'm telling you, it's not going to serve you well.
hey, I'm getting A's so far, 100% on some of these things, 100%.
I can only assume there is some sort of illicit exchange of goods and or services behind that.
Well, okay, we'll see what happens, but
so far
I haven't paid for it. Something. Maybe I will down the road. But anyway, I don't know.
Oh, you'll pay for it. I'll make sure. One, if your professors won't do it, I'll make sure.
Maybe they're being nice to me because I'm old. Let's not bother the old man. He might have a heart
attack. It could be. They all meet for coffee afterwards to talk about, oh my God, did you see William today?
Maybe that's going on because I'm an old man.
From now on, start everything you say in class with, now, I'm just a small-time country lawyer, but it seems to me.
Well, I was born and raised on the farm, so I don't know much, but yeah.
All right, I'm going to draw something out of the hat.
Okay.
I did it all quick-like.
That's good.
This is from Beth. It's about naming Johnson County. It's not. It is not about that.
Hojo County.
God's own Hojo County. Beth says, why doesn't Tony send his questions for William into the hat? Would you like to take this?
You don't have questions for me, do you?
Oh, yeah. No, I end up with questions for you sometimes. I just think of shit and ask you when we get online.
Oh.
I don't send questions into the hat. I mean, I definitely don't.
I ask you questions. I don't send them into
the hat. There's a broader, I bring topics to the show a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Without going through the major process. I mean, there's the short answer and the long answer. The short answer is because I can't. The hat is notoriously slow and irregular and downright random in how it spits out the question. So there's no telling when it's going to get there. And I have the power to circumvent that and talk about things when I want to talk about them. So I'm going to do that. But there is a larger, more nuanced answer here. And this is, I'm amazed I have to say this so far along in this podcast. I am, and it appears I am the only one, including all the listeners and William, I think, I am the only one who is opposed to the hat. I am not on the hat's side. I do not like the hat or what it is doing to my life, to the internet, to all of you. It's bad. It's evil. It sometimes dead is better. Tough room. No Pet Sematary fans here. Which, to be fair, I fucking hate that movie. So I'm not gonna play its game. Except for the parts by which I am like physically and biologically compelled. But I'm not gonna be like, hey, here's a fun thing. No, I don't want that any on me. That's on y'all.
Okay. I don't know how I feel about it. I guess I'm sort of indifferent. I mean, I joke about the hat being evil and stuff, but it's mostly worked out for me. So
10 bucks is 10 bucks.
Yeah. 10 bucks is 10 bucks.
Yep. 10 bucks is 10 bucks. It's very hot today. I think
it's going to be hot all week. It's going to be hot all
week. I closed up the house. It's not bad in here yet. It'll get there because the room that I'm in now has the southern exposure, and so the afternoon sun just beats down on it. So, and it's also the furthest away from all the air conditioning. So by like 8 o'clock at night, it's freaking sweatbox in here, even though every place else is not too bad.
Hmm.
So that sucks, because this is where the TV and PlayStation are. Anyway, my point was, I'm going to grill tonight so that the heat is mostly outside. And I'd like to get that out of the way before it's maximum heat. So I'm saying I want to stop doing this.
Okay.
I don't know how long it's been. It sounds good. What do you think, everybody? If you want us to keep going, say something now.
We're probably about 45 minutes at least, I think.
That's fair. You add in awkward pauses. I haven't done a lot of awkward pauses, so we can do several now.
Yeah, we
can
do
the intro and the outro is like a thing.
No.
There, Seth Meyers of Late Night with Seth Meyers has been doing a YouTube digital exclusive just on YouTube that doesn't show up on his TV show. That is corrections. And it's really, it's funny because people actually write in corrections and they're really pedantic. And sometimes he'll say something wrong in his correction. And so the next week he has to do correction for it. But what's really fun is how there's sort of an arc to it where like Seth makes it this big thing that like he is doing this on purpose because he wants things to get better, but it's clearly some sort of obsession for him because he gets really mad about the corrections, but then he insists on doing it. And there was one time where to leave, he said, I'm just going to stare silently at the camera until Amber, because Amber Ruffin was still there on the show because she's still a writer, says, tells you to cut. And until then, you just keep going. And he just stared at the camera. And it was like a minute and a half of solid just silence and doing that. And then Amber finally cut it. So I think about that sometimes.
For us to just look into our cameras and wait.
Yeah, I'd have to. So you wouldn't know. I'd have my hand ready, like right on the thing. So that at any time, like you don't know, because I'm not moving again. So it could. Like you, if you check my eyes, maybe, but then I'll just stare at the stop button and then you'll never know. So we'll do this for like.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.